Welcome to the Boxing Talk Show, fair but firm, with the Hall of Fame boxing referee. I'm Joel Cortez and co-host John Zimmel for all of Las Vegas.
Come on, guys, let's touch them up. Please fight. I'm Joel Cortez, fair but firm.
Welcome to the Fair but Firm Show here in Las Vegas, Nevada, the boxing capital of the world. Today, Monday, a nice, beautiful, sunny day, nice and hot. It's going to be about 102 degrees today. Not bad for
the
beginning.
That's a nice balmy. That's cool for Las Vegas summer.
We're just starting out the summer here, so it's not bad. Wait till it gets to be 115 degrees.
It's coming.
Then we're talking about being hot.
That's hot. Hot for Vegas.
Then about midnight, 1 o'clock in the morning, it's 105. We say, oh, thank God it's 105.
I know. Nice, cool 105-degree night.
Yeah. But talking about hot weather, man, we had some hot weekend this week.
Yes, sir. Speaking of the boxing capital of the world, why don't you tell us about your endeavor? It's very exciting.
Well, we had the Nevada Boxing Hall of Fame ribbon cutting event Saturday night here in Las Vegas. The first and only boxing museum in the whole country, besides the International Boxing Hall of Fame in Conestoga, New York, which is about 3.5 hours drive from New York City. So you're going to go to International Hall of Fame, drive, get ready for 3.5 hour drive, New York up to Conestoga, beautiful small little town.
But you can come to sunny Las Vegas.
Yeah, and come into the entertainment capital of the world.
See a show, go to dinner, have the best time of your life. Play some craps, and then when you're done, you can go to the Nevada Boxing Hall of Fame.
Yeah,
and the grand Nevada, now that it's at the Boulevard Mall.
Yeah, Boulevard Mall here in Maryland Parkway.
And right off the strip, 10 minutes from the strip.
Not even that. Ten minutes walking, maybe.
That's what I meant.
But I'll tell you, it is a beautiful museum. It's at the Heads Up Museum. It's within the Heads Up Museum. It's a 3D trick art museum. And there we got 2,000 square feet of space for the Nevada Boxing Hall of Fame. And that is the most beautiful setup you want to see. We have an actual boxing ring there. It's an interactive museum. In other words, you can get involved. You can hit the heavy bag. You can hit the speed bag. When I get some classes on boxing, we give a little simple little class on how to defend yourself, how to throw the jab, the right hand, the left foot. Anything above that, you have to pay for a personal personal trainer. You can't get that much.
Give you the basics, yeah. I'm not going to give you, to teach you how to win the title.
Yeah, there you go.
They're going to go put you through camp.
Yeah, I know you want to make those $100 million purses, but not.
Yeah, I know, but you got to, you got to get your own, like you said, you got to get your own coach there.
Yeah. But all kidding aside, but it's the most beautiful setup. We had a bunch of world champions here Saturday night and former world champions.
Yeah, drop some names. It was really an incredible event. One of the most fun things I've had.
Well, let's start off with one of my favorites. Sean Porter, the WBC, the welterweight champion of the world, was there.
He was very nice.
Yeah, Kevin Kelly. You had Caleb Plant, who came by the day before.
Yes.
And we had Kenny Adams, the former Olympic trainer, who has so many great champions as well.
Yes.
And we had...
Evander Holyfield was there. It was there a few days before that. He didn't show up at the grand opening, but he was there. Shane Mosley Jr. was there. We had Kenny Bayless, Russell Mora, a lot of big name referees. Joe Cortez was there. I was there. It was a lot of big names there. A lot of big fun. Diego Magdaleno was there. Big friend of the show. Yes. And but what an event! What an exciting, interactive museum. Like Joe said, you have a really fun time because you walk around. I mean, you see every exhibit. You see old Muhammad Ali gloves. You see tickets to Floyd fights. You see, posters from
championship belts, boxing shoes from Tommy Hearns.
Yes.
And the robes of Marco Antonio Barrera, Eric Morales, robes, trunks. You name it. I had my Rocky Balboa outfit that I wore as a referee for the movie. I have it there autographed by Sylvester and Paulie. Myself and Antonio Tarver, who was Sylvester Stallone's opponent.
Yeah, he was his opponent.
In the Rocky movie. So we have a great exhibit. I mean, beautiful showcase, a Muhammad Ali boxing ring. We have a World Nevada Boxing Hall of Fame ring as well.
I mean, you guys have exhibits going all the way back to, we're talking Jack Johnson, Jim Jeffries. I mean, just the turn of the century. Yeah, we're talking the turn of last century.
Yeah, we also had the President Trump signing the pardon of Jack Johnson. At the White House with Mauricio Sulaiman, the president of WBC, and Sylvester Stallone, who was
Deontay Wilder was there.
Yeah, they were there at the Oval Office. So those pictures are there on display, along with the Nevada.
Every kind of artifact you could ask for. Yeah. It's a really cool thing. And for fight fans that want to come to Las Vegas and couldn't maybe afford a fight ticket or didn't want to you know, put it around their plans, or their girlfriend doesn't want to spend the night, you know, seeing a fight. You can get her to go off the strip for a little. Tell her we'll watch Celine Dion that night or wherever you're going to go. But you can take her to the Nevada Boxing Hall of Fame, walk around, have a good time, and really, you know, it's a place for fight fans to be fight fans. And it was a beautiful thing.
Yeah, it is an exciting location. And on top of it, I have a professional boxing ring in there as well.
So, yeah, just in case she gets a little too, you know what I mean? You guys can hop in there.
We got to hop in there, take some photos. We don't want no contact in the ring, but...
preferably not, without a referee.
But the young kids were in there playing around a couple of minutes before the show, before the ribbon cutting. It was nice to watch the young kids.
It was pretty fun.
They were 5 to about 10 years old.
There was a kid there got real into it. You see him hitting the bag real hard? I thought he had a whole workout in.
I believe that was Kevin Kelly, former lightweight featherweight champion, who was there. I think that was his son.
Was it?
Yeah.
Oh, he was getting after it, man.
Yeah. He was punching that back pretty neat. His father taught him a lot.
Yes.
He's only about 5 years old.
Kevin Kelly, who, you know, our fans remember, had an excellent, like you said, world championship lightweight career, but also one of the most exciting fights of all time against Prince Nassim.
Yeah.
Featherweight. Yes, thank you. I'm sorry.
Featherweight, he fought some great battles with Prince Nassim Ahmed.
Yes.
And he fought some great fights. He was a great featherweight champion. But we had so many. We had to take our hat off to Michelle Corrales Lewis, who was the president of the Nevada Boxing Hall of Fame. And I'll take our hat off to the founder, Rich Marotta,
yes,
who made it all happen because it was his idea. He was a sports broadcaster for many years. And then before he retired, or just around the time he retired, he said, I want to get something to boxing. And he came up with the idea of starting the Nevada Boxing Hall of Fame. You know, this is a boxing...
There's other state boxing hall of fames, correct? This isn't, I mean, as in the California boxing... California has a boxing hall of fame. New Jersey has a boxing hall of fame. New York has a boxing hall of fame. But they don't have buildings, right?
They're just... No, those are virtual hall of fames.
So it exists as an entity. You're an inductee.
Yeah. You don't have a facility. There's
nowhere you could visit.
You can walk in. Here in Nevada, we have it. Now you come into an actual museum and walk in and say, wow, here's a professional boxer.
That's very exciting.
You got heavy bags. You got speed bags. You can hit on those. We got gloves you can put on. You'll take photos with some of the champions that will be there during the week. And we have a schedule. You go online to the Nevada Boxing Hall of Fame. You can see dates that I'm going to be there. I'm going to be there at least 4 or 5 days a week.
Oof,
and putting some time. Yeah, putting some time in. I'm dedicated. I have a passion for boxing. And, of course, here in Nevada, we got to do a lot. I would like to pay it forward.
Yes.
I want to be in there to give some time in. Photo shoot opportunity with the fans. It'll be a lot of a good experience for myself and for the fans as well, because I love being around the fans and really enjoy. You see where they light up.
I mean, fight fans are passionate. Fight fans have so much love. It's a niche sport, but my God, do we love our sport? Do we love our, you know what I mean? What we have, and it's nice that we have a home here in the boxing capital of the world where you can go and visit and hang out and, you know, like you said, put gloves on and dance around a ring and hit a bag and look at artifacts and, you know, Muhammad Ali's gloves. It's crazy.
Yeah.
And it's fun. And I'm really glad that I got to salute you, Joe, for really facilitating this move and putting it together and giving fight fans a home here in Vegas.
Yeah,
honestly.
Well, it's something I had like a guardian angel watching over me when I came up with the idea, the concept of putting up Nevada Boxing Hall of Fame. I finally got him a facility. They were Rich Marotta said, Joe, that was my dream to try to get somebody. He said, Joe, people have been talking for years how they want to do something, and nothing never came about. But I made it happen real quick, and now we got it for Nevada, and I'm very proud. And so I got to pinch myself because I can't believe that these guys believed in me.
Yeah.
And they said, Joe, coming from you, you're a credible individual. You know, we're going to do it for you. We're going to give you the space for Nevada Boxing Hall of Fame. And we got it in less than 3 weeks. We started setting up the place. We got stuff out of storage that Michelle had put away, some of my boxing memorabilia that was put in, other individuals that donated merchandise to put in, artifacts to be put into the museum was great. And any of you fans out there or any boxing individuals watching, if you have something you want to donate to the Nevada Boxing Hall of Fame, go on to the Nevada Boxing Hall of Fame .com website and see where you can contact Michelle Corrales Lewis and make donations so we can have him put up. We're going to be changing the artifacts in those cases and around the museum on a regular basis, like every 2 or 3 months, we'll be changing stuff around so we can
Come once. Come on every trip. Every time you come out here, you make sure you see what's
new. If you come out to Vegas 3 or 4 times a year, you're going to see different artifacts in the Nevada Boxing Hall of Fame.
Absolutely.
So we're going to make sure that we have as much as we can get. We'll put it all in storage. If you want to loan it, you don't want to give it away, just loan it to us for a while.
That happens all the time. That happens in museums and boxing Hall of Fames all over the country. Or no, Hall of Fames in general.
Yeah.
You know, and that's a cool thing. A lot of people like to do that, and it is fun. It's a cool thing to say, hey, I have this memorabilia that I, you know, loaned to the Nevada Boxing Hall of Fame in Las Vegas, Nevada.
If any of you fans out there watching, you have anything you think you want to donate, send us a little message right now online there. Let us know so we can get back to you and make sure we follow up and have it picked up. And on top of that, you know, there's so much more that we're going to do with the Nevada Boxing Hall of Fame. This is just the beginning. We did it all within 1 month period, and we got the whole the museum going.
It's crazy because being kind of behind the scenes, seeing what you guys all did, I mean, it really was in a lot of ways thrown together. But when you get there, it doesn't appear thrown together, not in the slightest bit. I mean, it's every single thing is perfect. It's in place. It's exactly where it needs to be. And it was incredible that you guys were able to do it in the short time you were able to do it.
It is beautiful. The colors are the red, the white, the black, and the gold as part of the logos of the Nevada Boxing Hall of Fame. It's so beautiful. We have a ring, a professional ring in there that it was just so great to have there, and they're going to be there permanent. So you got to keep giving us support. You want to subscribe to the our website, the Fair for Firm Show. Just subscribe and go on to our YouTube channel.
Yeah, you subscribe on our YouTube channel and share. Make sure you subscribe. But you know, if those of us who are catching us live right now on Facebook, we appreciate it. We love going live. It's one of our favorite things to do, hopping on here and, you know, walking that tightrope and talking to you directly. But sometimes people, you know, have busy lives, busy schedules. They can't always catch us right away. That's why we recommend that you subscribe. If you like watching us, subscribe on YouTube. Otherwise, if you like to, you know, listen while you drive or while you work or anything like that, we're available on iTunes, Google Play, podcast app, Audio Boom. We're literally everywhere. Wherever you watch or listen to podcasts, we're available on that site. So make sure you subscribe to one or all of those things, and make sure you listen and share whenever you can. Yeah, we do appreciate it.
Yeah, and if you're a guy coming out to Las Vegas, you have a convention group, you want us, John and myself, will be available to talk at your convention group.
Absolutely.
Talk about boxing, a little special event that we can do for you guys.
That'd be fun.
Just reach out to us through our website, thefairbutfirm.com, and send us a little note. And if you want to reach us by phone, they can call us 702-722-1353. To any additional information, want to call the Dillon and ask her about how could we have Joe and John come and speak at our convention group at a corporate level. We're able to do anything you want to make sure we fulfill your dreams and fulfill the handshake. You want some champion to attend some of these events, calling Dillon again at 702-722-1353. We can make that happen with
Absolutely. That's the same number, by the way.
It's a piece of cake. We can make it happen.
That's the same number, by the way. If anybody in here wants to get involved from a sponsorship standpoint, we've gotten our views up a whole lot now. We love our sponsors that we currently have. But if you would like to get involved, please call that same number, 702-722-1353. Join our family. We'd love to have you.
Yeah. Let's
talk about some boxing, huh?
Well, we are talking about boxing.
No, but it was nice. It was now a nice.
You want to talk about the fight that just happened.
I want to talk about the fight, baby. Yeah.
The fights are coming up. I mean, it was an amazing weekend. It was really
fun.
We
had a rare Sunday card.
I like
the Sunday cards.
I was kind of falling asleep there for what somebody's
end of the weekend.
With some of these lousy fights, there was maybe one fight that was a little dragging for me. Oh my God!
Yeah.
I'm falling asleep. I'm trying to keep my eyes open. They are ringside. I went in the back to look for some coffee. I'm not a coffee guy, but I needed something to keep me awake.
Mm-hmm.
I went into the bathroom and put some water on my face. I said, wake up, Joe.
He had a long night at the Hall of Fame grand opening.
It felt like I got knocked out. We were coming out of that concussive episode. You know, I said, well, wake up, Joe.
Well, depending on what ref was there that night. One of them might have stopped and one of them might not.
Yeah, I thought I was going to be stopped that night.
We'll talk about that in a second. Let's start with the first undercard that anybody really cared about, and that's Chris Colbert. Against his opponent. Now, Chris Colbert is a guy who's kind of flown under the radar as far as prospects go. That's one thing, you know, Top Rank does such a great job with all their prospects, Teofimo Lopez and Shakur Stevenson and, you know, all these other guys that you hear about all the time. But one guy who doesn't get a lot of that credit is Chris Colbert, and he should be. He should be on the forefront because as far as the 130-pound division goes, he is an up-and-comer who deserves a lot of credit. That dude is flashy, he's fun, and he's quick. And what did you see from ringside?
Well, I'll tell you, when he came into that ring, I kind of woke up a little bit because he came in with that flashy silver outfit.
That's what he does, yeah.
You know, and I said, whoa, it looked like a gladiator.
He had pink hair in his last fight.
Yeah, he came like a gladiator in that ring. I said, whoa, what's this? I said, well, I woke up again. I said, this guy better show up and do something good. Can't go out there looking so fancy.
Yeah. So, you better show up.
So all this charisma about him, he was all over the ring.
Isn't he? He's a star, man.
I said, he better do something tonight. And he did. He looks pretty decent.
He does look good. He's quick.
He reminds me a little bit of Pernell Whitaker.
Yeah?
You know, the
style, sweet pea style?
Yeah.
That's high praise. I love that.
He was like, you know, moving and he's stopping. You know, he was pretty cool.
I like that kid. He is a great. He's got those pull counters now, which I like a lot. Hard for a lot of people to. Yeah. I'm going to go kind of out of order here because we're talking about prospects. Now, that right before the main event, Joey Spencer came out and fought a guy whose nickname was Certified. And he almost got a certification. It looked pretty interesting. Now, Joey Spencer, who's looked phenomenal his entire short pro career, had a little trouble with Certified. And, I got to ask, there's sometimes where a fighter's team wants them to have a little adversity. They want them to go in there and stumble a little bit and have to find their way out, you know, and that's why they give him a tougher opponent.
Yeah, well, he needed that. I told him.
Was this one of those situations?
Well, he was a little troubled in the fifth round.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, you got when you get into the trenches there and you kind of feel, wow, this is not as easy as it normally is, then you can see, is he the real deal or what? And he proved that he has what it takes to be a world champion because he did come out. You know,
that's the trick, he came out of it. Deep water, can you?
Yeah, he was in deep water, but then he kind of took that second win when he went back into his corner, that 1 minute rest period, came out for the sixth round, came out there like if it was the first round.
I agree.
And he had his opponent hurt several times.
Oh, yeah. He looked good. He just didn't look as unstoppable as he does, you know, against his he was fighting a live opponent.
He was fighting a lot of C-class opponents.
Yes, sir. And now he's got to step up. He started
to fight B-class opponents now. And then when he started fighting the A-class opponents, that's when he'd be in the rankings.
But it takes fights like this where you learn how to fight through that adversity.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, this ends up being a really good thing for him in the long run. Yeah, this is what you want.
Exactly. That's what the trainer is the one. His father, Joey,
his father, Jason, right?
Yeah. Jason Spencer is his dad. And Joey showed that night. I told him after the fight, when they're coming down the steps out of the ring, I walked up to him. I said, listen, this kind of fight you needed. He said, yes, we did. The father, same thing. He said, Joe, we needed this kind of
go
a
back,
fight.
Look at that tape, see what you did.
And now they're going to go up, they keep climbing to get him. He turned pro when he was 17 years old.
Oh, yeah.
You know, he had his first pro fight here in Vegas.
So yeah, now, I mean, but in his weight class, he's going to fight some monsters, man.
Well, he looked pretty well fit and good muscles.
Where do you think he ends up?
I think he's going to end up.
He's a kid, man.
He just turned 19, so he's on his way
and
to.
He's what, 154?
Yeah, 154 pounder. Yeah. And he'll definitely go into 168 with no problem.
Probably, yeah. He'll probably settle in super middle.
Yeah, super middle.
But there's a lot of monsters in that division.
Yeah. But then maybe.
But in those heavier divisions, you're going to find some adversity. And he found some early on right here. And I think it's going to end up being good for him in the long run. You know, sometimes you get thrown in deep water, you got to find out if you can swim. Yeah. And he swam.
Yeah. You know, he had a good. I liked his left hook to the body. It was pretty devastating. And that's what kind of slowed down his opponent.
You've been involved with his team for, an outside.
Advisor from the outside.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, they've reached out to you and you've kind of overseen a little bit. And we've had them on the show maybe he had, what, four pro fights at the time?
Right, we had him on the show. Right.
Yeah, and we gave him a little exposure. And those guys, that kid's, he's the real deal. And I was glad to see him get a little adversity. You know, I heard people on the internet say he got exposed. I don't think that was exposure. That was adversity, and you know, you find a way around it.
Those are the fights you need at the beginning of your career.
Exactly.
You don't want a bunch of guys that you can, you know, pick apart in two or three rounds. No, he needed this kind of fight. These are the fights that make you a great fighter.
Agree, 100%. Now, speaking of a guy at the beginning of a career, we can talk about a guy at the opposite of that, and that's Guillermo Rigondeaux. This is a gentleman who's won two gold medals, who's an absolute phenom in the ring as far as fundamentals go. I mean, you can teach people how to fight just by watching his fights. He's unbelievable, but he's always kind of been... He's never been a fan favorite because he's, you know, refuses to fight in the box in a lot of ways. And he stays outside. He gets points. And that's why a lot of people have said that's why he didn't get the big money fights that he always thought he would until he moved up two weight classes to fight Vasily Lomachenko and eventually quit on his stool. That was a tough one for him.
Yeah.
So he's making kind of a comeback here. And he made a strange decision in his fight this weekend to fight in the box against this guy. And he was getting beat, Joe. He was getting beat pretty bad.
He was getting beat there at the end. And, you know, I said, oh, I don't think he's going to make it. I said, if you don't get by this fight tonight, you better just
probably pack it in.
Pack it in. And he came on strong and he got it.
Landed a big left hook?
A left hook. And his opponent went down. And the referee, Russell Morrow, a seasoned referee.
Yes, sir.
And people were booing because the referee, after he gave him the mandatory A count, he said, all right, step forward. You okay? And the guy said, yeah, but. Then the referee waved it off. Everybody started booing, at least the...
As they do, you know? Yeah, fans always boo about
stoppages. I said, yeah, people don't understand. I asked Russell Mora, can you explain to me exactly what you saw when you stopped it after the fight?
Mm-hmm.
He said, Joe, you know, as you know, we've been taught by great ringside doctors what signs to look for. And he says, and I asked him, you okay? Step forward, you okay? And he said, Joe, I can see he wasn't there.
No, see by the way he got hit that he went down hard.
He was so glassy eyed. He said, I'm okay, but his eyes are like all over the place. And Russell said, no, that's it. You don't want a guy to get knocked out, get hurt seriously, like in the main event.
Exactly. We'll talk about that in a second.
But anyways, so Russell Moura decided to waive it off. You know, we've seen fighters, if you let it go, then he get hurt seriously. Now they're taking him on the stretcher to the hospital. We don't want
because you were worried about. I mean, because your number one job is what?
The safety of the fighter first
number
and
one.
Foremost.
First and foremost.
You know,
and then enforcement of the rules.
Then the second is enforcing the rules. But last night I congratulated Russell Moura for his stoppage. I think it was a good stoppage. And I explained that to some of the fans at ringside. They said, oh, okay, we understand now.
What's the saying? Rather stop a fight how?
I'd rather stop a fight, a punch too soon than a punch too late.
Exactly. Now, which that brings us to the main event.
Okay, the main event.
The main event, we had Jermell Charlo. He was supposed to fight Tony Harrison to try and get his belt back that he lost in the end of December last year. And instead, Tony Harrison had to have ankle surgery, couldn't come out and fight. So he got a last-minute replacement named Jorge Cota, who was, you know, exactly that, a last-minute replacement. Now, sometimes that works out if you're Andy Ruiz Jr., but most of the time, you're a last-minute replacement. And he showed up, and he put him down in the second, or third, right, third?
Well, let's go to the first round.
Let's go to the first round.
The first round, I thought Cota did okay, you know. Charlo was trying to figure him out, like all good fighters, like Mayweather did against Conor McGregor.
Yeah, that's what you do.
You study your guy the first couple of rounds, then you say, okay, now I'm going in for the kill. And that's just what happened. Charlo just saw him.
Feeling out.
I gave the first round to Cota.
Did you?
Yeah, by hair.
He
barely pulled it out. But I thought he pulled the round out. And then the second round, Charlo started, you know.
Started imposing his will.
Yeah, and combinations, hit him pretty good. Good shots and rocked him a couple of times. The kid held on. And then
in the third round, he knocks him down with a vicious counter. He gets up. He gets a standing eight count. He's still holding on the ropes. And then the ref says, all right, continue. He takes his hand off the ropes. He says, get out there, fight. And then two punches later, he's out cold on the ground. Yeah, arms behind his head.
Yeah, I was kind of concerned for Cota the way he landed and the second knockdown. I said, wow. Man, I don't think there was no need for him to take that last punch like that.
No.
But he did, and thank God he made it up.
Do you think sometimes, I mean, seriously, because what we just saw, the crowd booing, going crazy because Rigondeaux, you know, won the stoppage, and people said early stoppage. Do you think that might influence, and I know it's not supposed to. It's not what I'm asking, and I'm not even saying if that happened in this fight. Could that influence the referee's decision to let it continue in the next fight?
Because
you're seeing the fan reaction, they're losing their mind, they hate the stoppage. It makes you go, yeah, get out there, fight again. You don't want to stop it too early.
As a referee, John, in this business, you got to have thick skin.
That makes sense.
You got to be able to take the criticism from the fans and from the fighters and the manager. I remember one time Angelo Dundee was screaming at me, yelling at me, because I didn't allow his fighter to keep it excessive holding. It was Slobodan Kasha against Eddie Mustafa Muhammad. In Yugoslavia.
Oh my God.
And Angelo Dundee, Joe, come on, what the hell? Let him fight. You know, you're not letting him fight. Let him fight. You know, but there was so much clinching. I got to the point, I went over to the corner. As much as I respect Angelo Dundee being at Muhammad Ali's main trainer.
Oh, yeah.
And Sugar Ray Leonard's trainer. But I had to go to that corner and tell the Angelo Dundee, Angelo, if you don't stop this yelling at me here like this in the ring, you're going to be coaching your fighter from the dressing room. I'll have you removed. But he got so pissed off at me. But, you know, as a referee, you got to take control.
Of course. You're the only man in the ring.
It's just like in baseball. You see these umpires, you know, they'll take a little bit. But then when these guys get in their face or whatnot, they say, you're out of here.
Yeah, you're gone.
You know, you got to go. But, you know, you got to respect
your And umpires don't have people's lives in their hands. You have two people's lives
exactly.
in
their hands. Exactly. And I'm there to enforce those rules. And you can't let these guys, you know, overrule you when it comes to talking about the trainers. Trying to, you know, confuse me and try to make me make a decision that I normally won't make, especially when it's a trainer like Angelo Dundee.
Yeah,
you can get influenced. Oh, Angelo Dundee.
Of course, he must know what he's doing.
You know what? He's telling me do this, do that. If I don't do it, you know, who knows what's going to happen? Well, you know what happened? There was a fight years later that I was going to be the referee, and Angelo Dundee was there with that fighter was going to fight in Atlantic City, and he told the commissioner, Larry Hazard, I don't want Joe Cortez to be the referee. And it all because of what happened maybe five years ago in Yugoslavia. I'm not going to tolerate any nonsense from anybody. I'm in charge. I'm the man in charge. Remember, like I said, I'm fair, but I'm firm.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
You are firm.
And I got to take the heat when I have to. You got to have thick skin. You got to be able to take the heat in the kitchen. If you can't, get out the kitchen.
That makes sense, man.
Simple as that.
That's a good point. That's a good point. And this is a perfect example of stop a fight too early versus stop a fight one punch too late. You can argue that the Rigondo fight was stopped a punch too early. But you could definitely argue that the Charlo fight was stopped a punch too late, and that's a lot scarier of a situation, man. And you see something like that, it's like we talk about, these people's lives, and it's crazy.
When I see a guy laid out like that, stretched out like that, I say, oh, my God. The worst thing comes to your mind, oh, my God.
No, of course.
I hope he's okay.
Because of course. You know? Because of course.
You don't want to see nothing like that.
It's a big, stretchers or worse.
It's a big black eye for boxing. And I know the guy's outclassed. The guy, and you know what? The hell, I'm stopping it, period. I don't care if they boo the hell out of me.
Exactly.
I'm going to stop it.
Yeah,
I'm going to protect these fighters. They're like my sons.
Yes.
I care for them. I don't care where they're from, red, white, blue, pink, whatever color they are. I'm going to protect them at all times. That's my job.
Absolutely.
That's what I was born to do, be a referee and to save these fighters for taking unnecessary punishment. I want them to come back another day.
I could not agree more, Joe. That's an excellent point. So Jermell's twin brother, Jermall, is fighting Brandon Adams in Houston, their hometown. This upcoming weekend. That'll be a fun fight. We also have a DAZN card with Demetrius Andrade versus Masiyash Sulecki. Now, Demetrius Andrade is a guy who is only known for having the only belt that Canelo doesn't have in the middleweight division. So it's a big deal. I mean, you know what I mean? Like, that's a big belt to have.
Yeah.
I mean, Canelo Alvarez has three belts. He's got the other one.
And I only got one around my waist.
You only got the one. Yeah, yeah, yeah. As far as I know, yeah.
I don't know.
And then we got these.
Yeah, these. Are.
Yeah, we got these. And... So I expect Andrade to come out and do what he's expected to do, hold on to his belt, keep that leverage. But on the undercard of that fight, you got Joseph Parker, which is kind of fun. He's making his DAZN debut because he hasn't really been, ever since he fought Anthony Joshua, he's been kind of floundering. But we know.
But he's only got to beat Andrew Ruiz. And,
he might end up fighting Andrew Ruiz again.
I think it'd be good to get a rebound. You know, the Prime Minister of New Zealand resigned. He said it was a disgrace that the officials gave that decision to Joseph Parker.
That's a big deal.
And he resigned. He says, this is a disgrace to boxing, to the sport. He just, as a prime minister, he said, I'm out of here.
Prime minister, the boxing, or whatever, he's the head of the boxing commission.
Yeah. And so it was sad that to see Andrew Ruiz lose a fight the way he did, because, I mean, it was no question about it. He won the fight.
Yeah.
You know?
A lot of people definitely.
That was his only blemish on his record.
I'm excited to see Joseph Parker back out there, though. Joseph Parker's not a bad fighter. Joseph Parker's he's a former WBO world champion.
Yeah.
He was the only man ever to not be knocked out by Anthony Joshua until his former opponent, Andy Ruiz, came and knocked Anthony Joshua out himself.
It goes to show how boxing is so...
It's so fun.
It's so funny, man. You got different styles. That's what makes fights.
Styles so make fights. I know. People don't realize that so much. Yeah. But, I know it's the most common said thing in the world, but it's funny when people try and use, different kind of logic. But the reality is, Deontay Wilder said it. Right after the Dominic Brazil fight, they said, hey, it took Anthony Joshua 7 rounds to knock him out. It only took you 1. And he said, look, my style was tailor-made for Dominic Brazil. It wasn't tailor-made for Anthony Joshua. Anthony Joshua was a great fighter. He said, but you're talking about a big guy, eye-to-eye with me with no head movement. He's looking to get KO'd.
Yeah, and I'm looking to see that Tyson Fury back in the picture again.
Yes.
After that KO win he had last week over Tom Schwartz. And I think that Tyson Fury and Deontay Wilder would be a great rematch.
I cannot wait for that fight. And it's going to be kind of fun because it's going to be so fun because they're tailor-made for each other inside the ring and outside the ring. They're made in every way, and that's what makes it such an exciting rematch.
Yeah, Saturday night, talking about great fights coming up, I got to interview Sean Porter, the WBC welterweight champion.
Oh, yeah?
And I introduced him to the crowd to the Bada Boxing Hall of Fame, and I put him on the spot right there. He said he thought he was finished with his little speech. I said, tell us, I hear you come, you're fighting somebody before the end of the year.
Yeah.
He said, okay. I'm fighting Errol Spence. But no date said, nothing written up what date, but it'll be sometime this year.
Yeah.
And I'm talking about Errol Spence and Sean Porter. I saw them both yesterday. I shook both of their hands at the fights yesterday, Sunday afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
And Sean Porter, you know, very confident, and Errol Spence looks very confident.
Errol Spence is always very confident, you know? Man. They both. I love Sean Porter for always taking the big fights, man. He knows a lot of times that he's in danger. He knows a lot of times that I mean, he's not the highest rated welterweight in the world. I'm not saying any secrets out of school, but at the same time, he fights them all, and he's ready to fight them, and I love that passion of Sean Porter. He loves it, man.
Yeah, he's a two-time world champion.
Yeah, for a reason.
First, an IBF champion, and then lost it to Kell Brooks out in Great Britain.
Did.
And then he come back and won the welterweight championship.
Errol Spence took that from Kell Brook, IBF championship.
So Sean Porter was our title back.
Oh, my God. Anyway, I'm excited. Haven't we been screaming for a welterweight unification for how long?
Yeah. Sean Porter says, you
now
know.
Now we finally have it, baby.
Yeah, he says we're in the mix now. Back in the old days, all these welterweight champions out
fighting
there.
Fighting each other. I'm so excited.
Yeah, he's all excited about it himself, Sean Porter is.
Yeah.
Anyway, fans, want to just tell you that have a great weekend. Protect yourselves at all time. And remember, I'm fair, but I'm firm. Touch them up. We love you guys.
Fair but firm with the Hall of Fame boxing referee. I'm Joe Cortez for all of Las Vegas.
Come on, guys. Let's touch them up. Team fight. I'm Joe Cortez. Fair but firm.